Welcome to the Mile 99 interview with your hosts, Jessica Harris,
Mike Turner,
and Greg Larkin.
Enjoy this episode. We'll see you on the trails.
See you out there.
See you there. And we are live.
Awesome. Thank you, Greg. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Mile 99 interview. I am one of your hosts, Jessica Harris. The Mile 99 interview is a place to hang out with like-minded folks in our trail community, share stories, successes, failures, and your deepest trail secrets. This is also the place to get the latest in local race news and find out what's going on in our community. We record in front of a live Zoom audience, one take, no breaks, and unlike the trails, what is said here is on the record. I'm joined by my co-host, Greg Larkin. We are missing a co-host tonight. Mike, this evening, is spending some time with his family. On May 30th, Mike's brother, Travis, died unexpectedly. Today was his memorial. Greg and I were able to join on Zoom, and it was really, really great to hear so many stories about Mike and Travis. We are sending lots of love and healing light to Mike and his family tonight. Miss you, buddy, and congrats on Cool Moon 100 this last weekend, just a few weeks after Cocodona 250. And Greg, my other co-host, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. I finally got snared by Omicron, though, on Saturday. So 2.5 years in, must have been that Little League pool party or something. I don't know. I feel 100% fine right now. I have a little cough for a couple of days, just waiting it out a little bit and looking forward to getting back out there, just going for a walk and some things like that. But ready for some more serious running coming soon. So I'll be emerging from that real quick. So how are you doing?
Good. I spent the weekend in cool California working aid stations and timing with Martin Singo and Anne, watching Mike race with a lot of people. One day it was crazy hot, like 95 degrees. And the next day Sunday, it was like raining a little bit. And so then jump right back into Kid Week, and here we are. Tonight, I just wanted to remind everyone that we do have a Patreon. If you want to stay on the post show to talk to our guests, join at the crew level, I believe, right, Greg?
Actually, I think any level is fine.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, right. Let's go
any level.
Any level. You can stay on for the post show, which is about 10 or 15 minutes exclusive with our guests. We want to thank all our continued Patreons. If you are watching tonight, hang on. You can hang out with the post show. Our newest Patreon was Dave Hope. We really appreciate your support. If a monthly reoccurring bill is not your thing, we are set up on Venmo and we take one-time donations as well. It helps us keep bringing you trail running content and local news that you are looking for. That is all our news. Greg, hit us with some community news.
Yeah, so let's lead right in. We have our guests coming in from the Western States Endurance Run. So they are still looking for people to volunteer over at Duncan Canyon. That is coming right up. And they've got over 20 spots available for the campout weekend, which is this weekend, if I'm not mistaken. So head over to westernstates.org, WSER.org, and go to the volunteering area there, and you can sign right up. I'm sure they'd be happy to have the help out there. And we also want to make sure that everyone is aware that our favorite running store in Auburn, Paulo Medina's Auburn Aid Station, is now carrying all of the new Western States gear for 2022, both in person and on their online store. So absolutely go check that out. Make sure you've got all of the updated swag. And we want to be seeing you around town. Send us some Instagram shots or tag us or whatever. Like, we love that. So please do that. Cool Moon 100. I mean, I was watching from afar. It was hot here too. same weather conditions. So I could at least identify what was going on the course. 103, I think, on Saturday or something ridiculous. And then totally cool on Sunday. One of the really interesting things that occurred there was that three Cocodona 250 finishers from this year entered the race and all three finished. So that's pretty cool. We've got like a pretty solid contingent of 250 mile runners up in this area. So that was really great that everyone persevered through the heat. TRT, we've mentioned this a couple of times. Tahoe endurance runs are coming up, the TRT this summer. and they're still looking for volunteers. So give them a shout, check out their website, trter.com. You can also get in touch with their volunteer director, Katie Bell, at trtvolunteer@gmail.com. I'm sure that would be super helpful. It's a great course. It's a great area. It's a great way to give back and help some people out that are running that race, another really challenging one. We have the Donner Party Mountain Runners. Again, they're going to be captaining some aid stations this weekend up at the Broken Arrow Sky Race at Palisades Tahoe, and also at TRT over the July 16th, 17th weekend, if you're interested in other volunteer opportunities. We have obviously a few races coming up, one in particular that we'll be talking about tonight. And we also have the Broken Arrow weekend, this coming weekend that I mentioned, Big Chief 50K. I've heard about this race a couple times. It runs out of North Star Resort on the 17th of July and just goes in all those trails back Mount Pluto between like Tahoe, Lake Tahoe and Truckee and all that. I ski out there in this in the winter time, so I'm sure it's just a beautiful area if you're looking for a nice 50K. And then again, a DPMR, they're going to be putting on the Point Moriah Trail Marathon on August 6th. And that's just like a really special family-friendly, group-friendly type of race trail marathon. You can do it all. It's one. You can do it multiple legs. It sounds like it's going to be a great time. It's their first one. They're really excited about it. And of course, Western States is coming. So that's our closeout for the upcoming races. Okay. So that's it for community news. Back to you, Jess.
We made it. What everyone has been waiting for. Now let's get into it. Craig, Diana, and Topher from Western States are joining us tonight. Longtime listeners will know that Craig was our very first guest in May of 2020, shortly after Diana was added to our Western States updates and talks. And now we're bringing in Topher. Let's give a warm welcome to Craig, Diana, and Topher. Welcome to the show. Craig, how you doing?
Well, we're 9 days out, so I'm a little bit consumed with a ton of details. I can't even really tell you what I worked on today. It's just been pretty intense. We have quite a few new things that we're working on, so it's even more intense. Normally this time is pretty crazy, but it's even crazier than it has been. But it's fun. It's fun. So
can't wait to hear all about it, at least some of it. Diana, how are you?
I'm good. Also looking forward to the race. It's definitely feeling like it is coming up, and you know, it's exciting. There's definitely the buzz is in the air and everyone's excited, and yeah, we're getting ready.
Thanks for coming on. And Topher, how are you?
Doing great. Thanks for having us all on. And you know, I was thinking, you know, this is my 25th year being a part of Western States somehow, either as a runner or as a sponsor in the past, as a board member. And I've got as much sort of butterflies about the race this year as I did my very first year. I think that just speaks to Western States. You know, it gets you, it's in the calendar. It's like a part of the rhythm. It's like Christmas Day is coming in ultra running. So pretty excited.
Yeah, it's going to be so great. So new and old runners are listening. So we're just going to go through, and if you guys wouldn't mind just letting us know what you do for Western States and how long you've been doing it. Craig, what do you do?
I am the race director, and this is my 10th year as the race director.
That's 10 years.
That's, I mean, it's kind of I'm also not technically, but I'm basically the executive director of the Western States Endurance Run Foundation, although we haven't technically changed my title or that, but that's what I do.
Awesome. Thank you. And Diana, what do you do?
I'm on the board. I'm president for the past 2 years, and I joined the board about 10 years ago and have just served in that capacity since then.
2 year president. We love it.
Yeah. And that started with the first year when I was president was the year we canceled the race. So that was my first job as president. And then last year I was president for the race. And then, so this will be the second year that I'm in that role.
It just keeps getting easier, right? I mean, compared to your first year.
Yeah, that was tough.
Topher, what do you do?
Yeah, so I also serve on the board. I'm one of our vice presidents on the board, and I spend a significant amount of time now with Western States on our live broadcast with Billy Yang, who also serves on our board. And I work closely with our sponsors and partners. I've been a sponsor and a partner in the past in my industry work. And so it's great to be on the Western States side, really helping energize that into the trail running community for both the partners and also for the race itself.
Awesome. How exciting. We're covering all the bases here. I know that there was a new mission statement that's put out. Diana, do you want to talk to us or even maybe read the new mission statement for Western States this year?
Sure. Adopted a new mission statement this spring. It was something that had been in the works for about a year. It was actually a really positive experience for our board doing the mission statement. I think a lot of nonprofits and boards think of mission statements as, you know, tedious and really difficult work. In this case, it was a really good collaboration. We had a small group that started the work. And then we got the whole board involved through a survey that was really helpful. And we did research about what is out there. And we were really just sort of modernizing and updating our mission statement, which had not been worked on in probably 30 years or changed. I think we had had one mission statement since we started. So we weren't really trying to change direction, but it was more to modernize it and make it really clean, crisp, and something that we're actually really proud of. So the mission statement itself is to deliver a world-class ultra running experience to every athlete. And we kept the focus on the ultra running and the athletes. And then we expanded on that in the vision and talked about there being a leader in the sport. And then the personal and community benefits that we try to promote through the sport of ultra running. And specifically, that's where we also mention our three pillars, which are the trail stewardship, research, and the life-changing experience of the race. And the last part of the mission statement was the values. And that was actually really fun to work on because it was just, there was an amazing amount of consensus on what rose to the top for us in terms of the values that are most important to our organization. And those were excellence, safety, respect, fairness, integrity, and community. And then we sort of fleshed out those and made them, you know, sort of more specific to us. So as one example, I won't go through them all, but like for excellence, we said that we set the standard for personal challenge and an event organization by embracing innovation while honoring tradition. So we really tried to make it very specific to us, both in sort of setting a standard of excellence and having that as our really the bar that's always out there in front of us in everything we do is striving for excellence, but also something very unique to our organization is sort of balancing that push-pull of embracing innovation and staying current and with the times, but also honoring the tradition and our roots and our history and where we've come from. So each one of the values, we tried to sort of dissect that way and look at and make it really personal to our organization.
That's fantastic. And, you know, that's a tough line to walk sometimes, I'm sure. but it sounds like you have the right tone, you know, to take the race forward and still just be true to the roots, which I love. You know, I think people like gravitate to this race because of that feel, you know, that just kind of grassroots feel. It's a small race. We all know that. And it's, you know, that's part of the appeal too. Shared experience in a small way, but you're bringing a lot of new stuff in as well. So kudos to everyone working on that. All right. Well, we want to find out on the ground a little bit too, like what's been going on the last few months. Any noteworthy race prep, or just kind of give us a glimpse into what it's like as you ramp up. And there's a lot of stuff going on this year. I know that.
Yeah, I'll start on this. you know, the trail was, first off, I want to acknowledge some of my Oregonian friends on the Zoom call from a lot of years ago, Steve Smucker and Dale Londos. Great to see you guys. Holy cow. What a surprise. The trail has been a pretty time consuming piece of the work this year. As most of the local people know, we were having some problems with the upper part of Cal Street, which is the section after Forest Hill going down to the river. And I don't want people to think poorly on these property owners. What prompted this was COVID bringing so many people up into our area. If you were in the Auburn State Recreation Area during COVID, you saw the overload of people that, I don't know what they used to do, go to shopping malls, go to movies, whatever, and they couldn't go there. So they came here. And there were a lot of users that were using the trail up there. There was an all trails entry suggesting that people could camp on the private land and then ride their bikes down Cal Street. And first of all, you can't camp on private land and you can't ride your bike on that section of the trail. So it was a double whammy. It brought a whole lot of people, and it just, there were motorcycles using it. And it just caused the property owners to stop and pause and say, what the heck's going on here? And it isn't that they suddenly didn't like us using the trail. They didn't like all the extra activity, mostly the bikes and the camping on the private land. And there were other issues going on up there from people who don't normally use the trail. So it had nothing to do with the normal use of the trail. It was this abnormal use. And they shut the trail down multiple times, which most of the locals know, because you'd go out there and there's handwritten signs saying the trail is closed. So we've been working through that, which has been quite complicated and time consuming. I didn't know much about easements, and I probably still don't know a whole lot about easements, but we've had lots of legal help and the state and the county. And we're trying to resolve the issue with the owner, hopefully outside of the courts. We're fine for the race. We're fine for the training runs. We're fine for Tevis and the Tevis ride. But that's still an ongoing problem. It's not going away. Earlier, you guys had asked me about this, and I was hesitant to say anything. I didn't want to, you know, litigate this in public. While we're negotiating with the owners, but that being said, we also have a really exciting project, the Granite Chief Reroute, which is a 3-year project and the tune of $1.4 million, probably be $1.5 million by the time you know inflation takes its toll. It's going to be $1.5 million. And it's rerouting realigning, I think is the proper Forest Service term, realigning the trail from the bogs, which if you've run Western States, you've run through the water. There's quite a few miles where you're running right down the creek, especially when we run, because the snow's freshly melting. For Tevis, it's a little bit later, so it's not as bad for Tevis, but it's really bad for us. I was just up there on Sunday. The day that was 75 degrees here in Auburn, it was 40 something degrees, and it rained over an inch up there, and the water was just running right down the trail. So this realignment is going to take the trail from around the Pacific Crest Trail. So as you come over the summit, Immigrant Pass, the first big pass, you go into Granite Chief Wilderness, and as soon as we can pass this cliff band, we're going to stay high. And drop right into Lion Ridge Aid Station. The views are going to be outrageous. We're going to be above those bogs. And it is going to save us about a mile and a half, which will allow us to get back on the trail after Robinson Flat. If people are asking, why are you on N43 after Robinson Flat? We need some mileage savings. So this will allow us to make some other adjustments down low. We also have an extension to Pucker Point. If you've run the Pucker Point Trail, which is after dusty corners, and you go around basically the contour around this old flume. Well, when it was built, they ran out of money and time, so they just brought it back out to the road. And if you run it, or if you think about it next time you run it, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Why did you just pop back out on the road? So the extension is gonna stay off the road, and where the precipitous trail starts, Pacific Slab, it's gonna come out right there. That's gonna be a really cool project. So that's what's been going on the ground. We've used our trail stewardship model now for maintaining the trail. This is the third year of that. We have 7 different sections now, and very similar to the Pacific Crest Trail. We have a steward for each of those sections, and they're responsible for scouting, doing the log out, and determining what projects need to occur, and then working with the proper agency, either the state or the feds, to implement those changes. And it's been working well. We have a couple big projects or weekend days, including this coming up weekend where we're up at Duncan Canyon Diversion. And if you do want to sign up, it's pretty late, but you can do it. You might not, you already missed the email, but yeah, we would love to have you. If you show up at the times and the places that are listed on there, we'll definitely put you to work. If you like Whitethorn, you should probably stay away from it, because we're going to attack Whitethorn. It's that nasty, pointy, really hard. Laz from Barkley would probably love the Whitethorn, because it just chews you up. So yeah, we'll be doing that on Saturday, and then we'll be going back into the canyons, El Dorado and Deadwood, on Sunday, and doing some last minute brushing, and a few trees have come down in those 2 storms we have. So that's been a lot of the time this year, the trail stuff. As Topher will talk here in a bit, Jessica, you had something?
Well, I just, the chat is kind of blowing up on everything. We really appreciated the Cow Street update, because us locals, we want to respect the land, but we never know what's going on. So I think it was really nice that now we know the trail is closed, but it was okay for those training runs and for Western States and for Tevis. And then anything going forward, I'm sure we will hear about when it.
Yeah. And if anybody, and I've told this to many people, if you're out there and you encounter a landowner or the caretakers out there, engage them and tell them who you are and what the trail means to you. They are not against the ride or the run or the riders or the runners. So they're, talk to them, engage them, tell them what you do, tell them who you are. And make sure you have 2 minutes, because they'll talk your ear off. So
pause your watch.
Yeah, definitely pause your watch if you're that kind of person. and let's see. So yeah, the race day broadcast, which we'll let Topher talk about, that's been really exciting. It's a huge lift. Thanks to Topher and Billy. It's going to be significantly improved over last year. We're going to overpromise. I mean, we're going to underpromise and overdeliver is what we're hoping to do. So but I think you'll see incredible improvements there.
Yeah, let's shoot over to Topher then, and let's get into the live stream. Topher, what's going on? Last year I thought it was a pretty awesome live stream. What's new? What's changing? What's better? Bigger, better?
Well, I mean, first, it would be it's important to know, Western States a nonprofit organization. And so for us to create a live stream requires funding, and it wouldn't be without the tremendous support of our partners, our sponsors, that really have helped get this off the ground with us. In particular, Hoka, who really is part of our partnership agreement, helped really create the seed funding in the first year last year for the live broadcast. And as we know, so many people around the world are using live digital media, like today, right now, to engage in the community. And so we knew that pulling together a live broadcast would be really, really important. Last year was our first year. as most people also know, Western States is one of the most remote courses in the planet with regards to coverage. And so, you know, often, you know, the UTMB race has got a tremendous track record of live broadcasts, but largely Europe is covered in the mountain regions, like an urban city would be with cell coverage. So that's a totally different dimension. I think for our team, the riddle of solving how to create a compelling and exciting live broadcast for 31 hours, because for us, it's very important to showcase, as Diana talked about in our mission, one of our pillars is creating extraordinary experiences for runners. And we believe in the concept that every single runner, from the first place finisher to the final finisher, has a story to tell. And we think the live broadcast can be a tremendous way to tell those stories and share those stories with the world. And so Billy, in the vision really he's bringing, he serves as our director and producer of the live broadcast. We've got an incredible team, a combination of volunteers and production folks, hosts that are all part of this live broadcast. And we've got five separate sponsor partners that are enabling this to come to life this year, our second year. The biggest change we made this year in the live broadcast, which hopefully will give more real-time live coverage, is we have, thanks to SpaceX and Starlink, secured some additional satellite capability that will provide us more on-course live coverage. And we also have a tremendous amount of in-depth storytelling about some of the featured runners. Again, many runners, not just the front of the pack, but mid-pack and golden hour finishers all have a story to tell. And we think this year, you know, Billy's a tremendous storyteller. And we think this year is going to be incredibly compelling content. And so we actually will host many live sessions next week as part of Race Week. So Thursday morning from 9 to 11, Thursday of Race Week from 3 to 5, and Friday morning, 9 to 11 a.m. Dylan Bowman and Corinne Malcolm will be hosting a preview show. You can sort of think of this as like Saturday pre-game day with many of the different elite runners, race management sponsors. It's basically like a Burning Man Coachella combined preview for ultra running. So we're really excited about it. The actual live broadcast kicks off at 4:15 a.m. on race morning, and it continues nonstop through Sunday morning, 11 a.m. And so we've got Dylan Bowman and Corinne Malcolm, which will be serving as our top 10 hosts. They'll be taking the biggest shift from 4 a.m. to roughly 1 a.m. They'll be covering the top 10 male and female finishers. And then we have a silver buckle shift that will be running two new hosts that will be running the show from 1 a.m. to roughly 7 a.m. And then we'll have our golden hour shift from 7 a.m. to 11 a.m. So we welcome everyone to tune in. Last year, we had over 250,000 individual page views and 750,000 impressions or actual interactions in over 25,000 chat sessions. So please come by, check in on race day. You can chat with the host directly. It's a super engaging and awesome way to catch all the action on race day. We're really excited about it.
And then I know Cocodona, since I just watched that for Mike, they had different kind of like blocks of time. Is that going to be the same for Western States when you log into YouTube, or is it literally going to be 31 hours on the same?
Yeah, good question. So YouTube has a technical, they haven't thought about just endurance live casting. The way the world never thought about running 100 miles. Why should we expect the world of digital media to be any different? And so the there's a technical requirement with YouTube that says after 10 hours of live recording, you need to close one channel and open a second channel. And so you'll see that. I agree, Greg. Come on, let's go, YouTube. Let's get to 31 hours, please. So we could have one, but you will see, and we'll do a lot of social media to help people move from one feed to the second feed to the third feed. We expect to have three total feeds. That way we can capture all of the chat content. It will be hosted on our YouTube channel forever, so you can go relive it. And we'll have an easy way to navigate through that. And you can read through all the chat and so on. So it was an awesome way to engage with the global community. We had over 25 countries tune in, and it's an awesome way to follow the action. I mean, even us on the race course, totally engaged. We can go anywhere on the race course. We're following live, like we're checking out. That's where you get the most updates on what's going on race day.
I think it really is a full circle to the mission statement. You guys are trying to grow the community in such a nice, organic way. Everyone can participate no matter where you are. If you don't know what Western States is, to you've run it 10, 15, 25 times. So really appreciate it. And I'm really excited about the live stream because it's so nice at 2 a.m. you can just, you can watch it and someone's there. Exactly. Someone's following along with you.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, like the true hallmark, and I think the hosts do such a good job of engaging everyone, whether you're a hardcore, long-term ultra runner, or if you're brand new to the sport. You know, I'd ask any of you to do this maybe before the broadcast. Ask someone who knows nothing about ultra running to tune in, watch a bit of the live cast, and then check in with them on Monday morning. I did that last year as sort of a test piece. And people come back and they were talking about the race, the blow by blow on the race and the golden hour, like they've been in the sport forever. And so the beauty of this digital ecosystem is it just allows us, even though we're a small race, Greg, as you mentioned, and we now have one of the biggest platforms to communicate the energy of Western States to the whole world. And it's a really awesome capability.
That's absolutely fantastic. I can't wait to see some of that. Can you give me just, I'm an IT person here, so I'm just interested, like, can you just give a quick overview of like the technology you're using to do this? We heard SpaceX. I'm just interested in some of the other stuff going on.
Yeah, boy, we'd have to invite on some other folks for me to give you all that.
Yeah, no.
We have a great production team we have hired from LA. That the guy who runs the production team had never run a mile in his life. He came to Western States last year. We ran everything outdoors with fans. The computers almost went down a couple of times. We did have some brownouts with the computer systems, but he's back in with his team this year. And we actually have a air-conditioned RV that will be parked at the finish line. And that's to keep all of our technical equipment cooled to at least 90 degrees instead of, 120. And you'll be happy to know that the owner of Studio 637 ran his first marathon after being so inspired by Western States last year. So we've converted more people to the world of ultra running just by being part of Western States, which is
the race reaches everyone. That's wonderful. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure this live stream is just going to be unbelievable, and we can't wait to see it. Switching gears a little bit. What about medical research, medical projects, things of that nature? Dr. Andy has been our guest several times over the past year or two. And he always has some interesting stuff going on. He's been really good about giving us updates as the race has kind of, proceeded through the pandemic and all that. And then there's often research projects that go on in conjunction with the race. Are there anything new this year to talk about or anything else related?
Yeah, I'll start. And then if you want to chime in, feel free. So Andy is our medical director now for the third year. His first year was also Diana's first year as president. So the pandemic. He we didn't know when we brought him on that he has a degree in epidemiologist. I've mistakenly said that he's an epidemiologist. He's not an epidemiologist, he's a family practitioner, but he has a degree in epidemiology. And it was so helpful while we're trying to navigate COVID. And we were pretty early on in the cancellation game. So it's been great to have him. He's brought a lot of energy to the medical infrastructure, to the medical program. This year, the changes, Jessica mentioned it in the pre-call, we had 4 45-minute seminars on Facebook Live that were targeted to runners in the race, but they were general enough that they were useful to any ultra runners. That was new. And he's bringing back a medical symposium at Olympic Valley, Palisades Tahoe on Wednesday. You can get CME if you're of that medical profession. You can get CME by attending. Hopefully, that'll continue to grow and be useful in a more practical way. We had a medical conference for a couple of years, maybe 6 or 7 years ago, and it was very research based, very technical, and it was hard for most of us that aren't medical or research professionals to understand. So Andy will bring more of a practical perspective to it. You can still sign up for that, I think. That's on Wednesday. And then the medical research, we're bringing on 2 new medical directors. They're co-directors. Did we announce them yet, Diana?
I don't know if it's been formally announced, but it's public. It's not that it's not public information. But John Diana is stepping down after a number of years as our medical research director. And he did an amazing job getting us to where we are now. He was less of a researcher himself and played more of a role of being able to vet research projects for us. And he is stepping down. And so Megan Roche and Emily Krause will be our new medical research directors going forward. They're the co-medical research directors. And we're really excited about that. They're affiliated with Stanford and are more directly involved in research themselves. Part of bringing on John Diana kindly gave us a fair amount of notice. He's moving to Seattle and he gave us time to think about the transition. And as part of that, we also sort of revamped our medical research, how we do RFPs and how the review process and the role of the medical research director. So it was actually good board work behind the scenes. And then we were very happy with the outcome of getting Emily and Megan, who actually are both runners as well and very involved in the ultra running community, and both have experience at Western States as well. So we're really looking forward to working with them.
And they will be doing a talk at 3:45 on Thursday up at Palisades Tahoe, if you want to listen. So they're very excited.
Yeah, they're going to bring a lot of great energy.
There's a lot of energy. And Megan Roche is married to David Roche. If you read his stuff in Trail Runner magazine, he's all over the place, and he's a coach himself. So we're really excited to see what they bring.
Yeah.
In terms of what you're going to see at the race this year at research, there's 2 research projects. There's this cardiac study that we've had in the past. Subjects are going to be wearing a monitor for a week, or I think they're called participants, not subjects, participants. They'll be wearing a heart rate monitor for a week, starting in a couple days here. And then they'll get some kind of, is it an echocardiogram or, I don't know the technical term. And then there's a gut biome study. Not very invasive, either one of those. Neither of them are invasive. I think the gut biome, you have to provide a stool sample, maybe before and after, but nothing that is going to impact your race.
No colonoscopies the night before or anything.
No, not that bad.
But, a lot in the past, a lot of our research was targeted at hyponatremia. We spent quite a few years on hyponatremia, and we're probably not going to be doing that as solely focused on that as we were a few years. So we'll see what Emily and Megan bring.
Western States does so much beyond the day of the race. It always blows my mind, like research here and getting grants for trail work here and creating an entire YouTube world ecosystem. And another thing that you guys do that I saw you guys post about 6 days on your Instagram was the Friend of the Trail Awards. And I don't think everyone is super familiar with that. And I think it's such a great community building thing. Do you guys want to talk about that?
Sure. It started, what does it say on the website in the 80s, I think.
1983.
83. Yep. Thank you. And we've given about 400 or so of them out. They go to
442.
There you go. Thank you. those details I didn't have to keep in my head, and I have a limited number of details that I can keep in my head at one time. Leaders, group aid station captains, or trail team leaders, or whoever else wants to nominate, somebody can nominate a volunteer that has given quite a significant amount of time and energy and to the race. Usually they're overdue. We try not to give them too early. We are giving out 12 of them this year. The wood was made by a local cabinet maker. It was a three-step process. The wood was from a cabinet maker here, and then there's another guy who has the big machine that does the router work, and then third one, who you guys know, Kerry Williams, he finished them for him, and he drove the project. So the wood has it has more local meaning this year, which I'm really proud of. And each one is different. Some are oak, there's cherry, there's alder. So we gave the first one out last night, Tuesday night, in my house to Laura Matz, who is our volunteer coordinator and worked at Devil's Thumb since 2010. The rest will be given out here probably on race day. Most of them will be on race day. So it's cool. It's fun. It's really fun to give them out.
I love the aspect of, having like that local feel, the local wood and all that, that just makes it even more special, I'm sure. So I'm sure they appreciate that. That's fantastic. Well, we have a question in the Zoom chat, and it was also something we had on our list. And we know that there's, more runners in the race this year due to the 5-year rolling average, and that will slowly be decreasing over the next few years. And then it's a perennial interest item to know what's the status of the lottery going forward. Are there changes? Is there anything new to report?
Well, let me start with the 5-year rolling average. The way this was implemented in 1991 or 90, it's not the way I would implement it right now if I were involved, because with a 5-year rolling average, you can never have more runners. You can't compensate, because eventually that low year, if it was a cancellation, is going to fall out of the average. And those years that you overcompensated, your 5-year rolling average is going to increase. So unfortunately, that's what's written in our MOU with the Forest Service. So we're kind of stuck that, even though we had a 0 year and then we had a 330. Jessica's going to tell me exactly how many starters we had last year. 333, I think, maybe. We can't compensate, because that 0 and then that 333 will fall out, and then those compensation years will put us in a deficit. It's probably going to be somebody else in the future, be a different race director, different president, maybe a different vice president. So technically we can't compensate. But we did negotiate with the Forest Service to step out of the box a little bit. And they allowed us, let me back up. Because we use the waitlist model now, we can start exactly the number that we say we want to start. Before we implemented that, it was always guesswork at how many people were going to DNS. So it was all over the place. And it was really hard to even negotiate with the Forest Service. because you would just be guessing. But they did allow us to compensate a little bit. We got 385 runners this year, which is a little more than 369, but it's a significant, 16 is significant. So there's 16 more people running this year than they would have. And then next year it'll be 380. And then the following year it'll be 375. And then we're going back down to 369 and we'll stay there until something changes. Are we going to make any changes to the lottery and the entry process? I think we've made quite a few recently. We relaxed the consecutive year requirement, which was, I was calling it inhumane when someone got injured and couldn't run a qualifier or something happened to them. You know, they put 8 years into the lottery and then something bad. It felt really hard. It's not fun to have people in that situation. It's not at all something that we enjoy. So relaxing the consecutive year requirement allows people to maintain their tickets. They can take a year off, 2 years off, 3 years off, 4 years off. We still don't know exactly how that's going to impact the numbers going forward. We had a slight decrease in the total number of applicants this year from 6,700 to 6,200. Jessica, you can tell me exactly how many, but about a 500% or a 500 number drop. We don't know if that's because of this consecutive year requirement or was it the general trend because of COVID. Other races, Signup has put out stats saying that we're down about 15%. So it's hard to say whether our change in policy is the reason we went down to 6,200. And will it, because now you'll have people who have lots of tickets and they won't lose those tickets. You know, will it increase the number of tickets that it'll overwhelm our drum? We have ideas on how to still maintain that paper, draw the name, Price is Right, come on down, which is super exciting. We have some mathematical models on how to implement that and reduce the number of tickets, the physical tickets in the lottery, in the drum. But because we went down this year, we're not going to implement that immediately. And we built the portal. This was the first year of the portal. Instead of signing up at Ultra Signup, you had to sign up at our portal. You'll continue to see us use the portal. Like we used it for the Pacer matchup program. We use it for the general information form. If you're in the race, you're going to go to your portal and you'll fill out your general information that John Menninger uses at the finish line when you're coming around the track. We have other plans going forward on using. So if you don't have a portal account, go ahead and make a portal account, portal.weezer.org. And let's see, the other part of this question was the impact of UTMB's reach and expansion of canyons. Maybe we could segue into UTMB.
And we'll I just had one idea. You could just make the tickets really small. Uh-huh. Like, and then we could do a little magnifying glass. I mean, I'm here for the ideas, but yeah, let's get to UTMB. Squash maybe some of the rumors that might be going on. Canyons and UTMB are hooked up and in for the long haul. What about Western States and UTMB? What's going on?
Yeah. So, I mean, just to hit one final comment on the lottery process. And I think just to Diana's point, like we pride ourselves on these two values of fairness and integrity. And we speak often about the entry process to Western States. And I would it's a big shout out to Craig. I mean, but the entire organization scrutinizes every year the entry process to ensure the fairest and most open and transparent way. And Craig is resolute that way. You know, you go anywhere in the world, you go to the farthest corner of the world and someone goes, hey, you know, you're associated with Western States. The first question normally you get as a board member or any association with Western States is like, oh, can you get me into the race? And the answer is always, no, we have a very specific process, and Craig does an outstanding job of being really open with the public about that. And we pride ourselves in, as an organization, with that. So I just, that's one final point. Your question on UTMB. Yeah. UTMB. I don't know how many folks on the call are familiar with UTMB. The race was created in 2003 in Chamonix, France. It runs around, it goes from France to Italy to Switzerland. I had the good fortune of running the first 11 UTMB races. And so watch that, Craig.
Okay. Who won the first UTMB, Topher?
Well, it was won by but followed shortly after from yours truly. So
thanks. Oh, you were number two. Okay, I'm sorry.
The shout out, Craig. Thanks. But the race was born by really a mom and pop group of husband and wife, Katrina and Michelle Paletti, and really with the desire to create an exceptional experience for runners. And it grew because the concept of running around the rooftop of Europe through three different countries and 10 different villages gave it almost a Tour de France feeling. And so we, in the 2010s, created a loose affiliation and then somewhat of a structured partnership through the UTWT organization, which stands for the Ultra Trail World Tour. That dissolved in 2020, 2021. And in 2021, we created a partnership really with UTMB. UTMB has grown over the years, and they have built their UTMB World Series races around the world. And so in 2021, we established a partnership with UTMB. We're both still serving as completely independent organizations. As I mentioned earlier, we're a nonprofit organization. We have very specific governance and an organizational structure, which quite frankly would never allow us or enable us to ever remove our independence in the way we're structured. We pride ourselves in how we're structured. And so nothing would ever enable us or waver us from doing that. But that doesn't mean we can't collaborate with other great organizations. We think the UTMB is a terrific organization that's also transforming lives. And there's many areas that we can collaborate in, like medical research, like race management, live tracking, and also just rules management in many ways that we can collaborate. And what we've done also in this partnership now that's tied the two organizations together, but also our partner HOKA together, is a combination of ways. One, several of our golden ticket races are also UTMB World Series races. So now back to your specific question of Canyons. Canyons is both a Canyons by UTMB race. It also is a golden ticket race. And now golden ticket winners at Canyons and golden ticket winners at Canyons are also automatic entrants into the corresponding distance in the UTMB Chamonix race. So in the case of Canyons, it's a 100K race. Its corresponding race in August is the UTMB or the CCC race that starts in Courmayeur. And the top three runners of Canyons get automatic entry into CCC. The top two runners, of course, punch their golden ticket into Western States. So there's a nice pairing for all of the by UTMB races have automatic corresponding entry into the UTMB race. And then every finisher of Western States this year in 2022, if you cross that finish line in Auburn, you'll of course earn your bronze or silver belt buckle, Western States belt buckle. You'll also earn four running stones and you'll have guaranteed entry into the UTMB lottery. And so that gives you automatic entry into the UTMB lottery already. So you have the distance qualifier and you have the running stones qualifier. You can think of running stones like lottery tickets. And the top three finishers of Western States will gain automatic entry into UTMB. And they can take that entry either in 2022 or they can wait until 2023. So that's both for the top three male and female finishers. So there's a lot we're doing to collaborate. We think they're a great organization. And we think that our partnership creates independence with both organizations, but thoughtful collaboration between both organizations.
That's perfect. I mean, I love the fact that you're forward thinking enough to recognize the benefit of those collaborations with these other organizations, and echoing back to your mission statement, still staying true to the roots and providing that just fantastic environment and experience for all levels of runners, you know, that do this race. I think that really says a lot about the leadership at Western States. And, you know, I'm sure I appreciate it. I would imagine our community does as well. So thank you all.
They really do a nice job of helping us both identify and give a funnel for some of those international runners as well. So some of our golden ticket races, international golden ticket races, are by UTMB races, and that allows us to provide some level of access to international elite runners as well.
Perfect for exposure, for sure. Well, we have one question here. We're going to move into sort of a little bit of a wrap up. I did want to just do a quick poll, though. Each of you, who's to watch this year? Anyone? I didn't say favorites. I'm just wondering who's to watch. I'll start with you, well, Diana.
I will say this.
Topher, go ahead.
Yes, I will say this. The so we will be broadcasting live our race briefing on Friday afternoon. And we will be introducing the runners to watch in 2022. So I never like to give any specific shout out to any specific runner, but we would say tune in and you'll see the full lineup of talent. We think it's one of the most, it's an open race this year without our two returning champions. But it's one of the most competitive races. Western States is always one of the most competitive races. But we also have so many wonderful stories that go all the way to the golden hour. And those always, for us, are probably the most emotionally charged stories that inspire us the most.
Absolutely. And for anybody that's listening live or on the podcast later, if you have any way to get yourself to Auburn, to the Placer High track, right before the race cutoff time between 10 a.m. and 11 a.m. on Sunday, it will be nothing like you've ever seen. Tears will be shed. Heroic performances will be shown. It is, without question, one of the best scenes you can imagine. So get yourself there if you have to. Get that plane ticket right now.
I'm not going to pick favorites or tell you who to watch either, but I Run Far did previews on both the men's and the women's field. And those, I read the men's today. How would you pick someone out of that lineup? There's so many people who will be fighting for those top 10 spots, and the same with the women. So go to I Run Far.
Well, I can pick a couple favorites because we have local favorites, and I'm pacing Dave Hope. So Dave Hope's going to do so good. And go Tina, we have Jennifer, we have Caleb, we have some locals. So we're pretty excited here on the ground floor.
Yeah, there's just no way to express how every single year it's the same story. It is going to be an absolute burner out there. Like it's so many different people that could just, you know, take it. And then the number of people, like we're saying, at the golden hour, I mean, it's just, that's the type of race this is. It's never not going to be exciting. I think I used some weird double negative there, but anyway.
But when we've had the dominating runners, and we had Andreessen win 14 in a row, or Scott Jurek won 7 in a row in Walmsley, it was his to lose, right? And because we don't have those people in the race this year, it really is wide open for the top spot, unlike prior years.
Yeah, that is true. And we do have some up and coming runners. I know there's a few out there, but definitely, like was recommended, please go check out those race briefings, those runner bios and such on I Run Far, and then definitely check out that that race briefing prior. So anybody that wants to learn more. Let's see. I think we did have a question here that I wanted to get to real quick, and then we'll wrap the show up. And the question is, do you know of any Grand Slam runners that are going to be in the race this year that are going for multiple finishes within 1 year at the various different Grand Slam races?
Phil Sanderson is one. He's in the Grand Slam for his, I think, third, or wait, I can't remember how many times he's been doing the Grand Slam, but this is one of many Grand Slam by him.
We don't keep track of Grand Slam runners. If we occasionally would get people asking, hey, can I get special entry into Western States because I'm a Grand Slam runner? If we offered any kind of compensation like that or special consideration, there would be 5,000 people trying to run the Grand Slam. So we just completely stay out of that. Like, you have to go to the Grand Slam site and check that out. I think Wasatch is the only one that gives you special entry, but we don't even pay attention to that. So not that it's not an incredible accomplishment to do it, but it has nothing to do with us. So.
Something to see. We have been with you guys for an hour. We thank you guys so much, Craig, Diana, and Topher. First time on the show, Topher. You did so amazing. We're going to have you back every single year. Thank you so much. If you guys have donated to our Patreon during this, you can go ahead and hang on. Our Facebook is the Mile 99 Interview. You can watch this back 100 times. So fun. Our Instagram is at the Mile 99 Interview. We post on our stories a lot, community news, when our shows are coming out, and all the good stuff. Our Patreon is up as well, and our Venmo is at the Mile 99 Interview. Thank you guys so much for joining us for an hour, and we will see you guys all on the trails. Thank you.